Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a show where every week we take a trip back in time. We listen to veterans, primarily from our World War II generation, tell us what they experienced in the service of our country. The idea is to honor them for their service and the sacrifices they made that have paved the way for our freedom. We want to preserve those stories so we don't forget how much our freedom cost. And along the way, we learn quite a bit about what life was like way back when. And today we're going to hear about a little bit of Europe during World War II, including some fierce days in Italy. You're going to learn why the 88th Infantry Division became known as the Blue Devils. And we're going to hear from one of those devils. I don't know if he likes being called a devil, but it's 88-year-old Ruben Ramirez of Reedley, California, originally from Southern California. Mr. Ramirez, what was it like growing up in Southern California? The Los Angeles area wasn't quite so crowded 70 years ago, was it?
It wasn't like the freeway is now. It's terrifying to drive the freeways down there now, where at my time was riding, not cable cars, but streetcars. And we used the streetcar to travel into downtown from the outskirts of the neighborhood.
Did you grow up in a big family down there?
No, it was one brother and two sisters. And the brother was killed in the Philippines in 44. And my one sister passed away 8 years ago. And the other sister still lives in Pomona, so we're the only ones left.
Was that an older brother or younger brother?
Older brother. He was 7 years older than I. And he went into the service in 41, right after the draft started. He got shipped to the Pacific, and I ended up going to Europe.
Well, what do you remember about December 7th, 1941? Do you remember how you got that news?
Three other friends of mine, we were all in the downtown theater in Los Angeles. They announced, they stopped the movie and announced that what had happened to Pearl Harbor and everything else. So they cut the movie and started playing patriotic music, and everybody and the people were just crowding and running outside, you know, with excitement of it. But we just looked at each other and said, well, I guess there's going to be a war. Although we, as kids, we would go to the library and read all about World War I. About the fighting and the airplanes and all that, and then we'd go to a movie. So when that hit us, we were kind of excited about it. We didn't know if we were going to be involved into how deep we were going to be involved.
Well, and I've heard a lot of stories because I ask everybody that question about December 7th, and that's a pretty unique way to experience that. I think these days if something like that happened, people would ask for their money back because they didn't get to see the rest of the movie. Doesn't sound like you were doing that.
Nobody thought about money for at that time. Just it was, well, it hit you hard. Because you figure there's got to be another war.
So your older brother goes in shortly thereafter, and I guess you probably had some time still to finish up high school?
I didn't finish high school. I dropped out 11th grade and then went to work. When I came back, I finished my GED testing and everything. I passed that with good grades and everything. I regretted dropping out afterwards, but what was done was done.
Well, I'm curious what it was like to still be here in the States and know your brother was heading overseas. Were you concerned for him? Were you worried about him? Did you keep in touch with him? What was that like?
We more or less kept in contact, and whenever he was assigned to camps around California along the coastline, he was in St. Louis Obispo, Fort Ord, other places that we could travel to. We'd all pile into the car and go and spend a weekend with him.
Kind of sounds like you looked up to him.
We were close. We were very close. His nickname was Hank. His older friends always called me, "Here comes little Hank," because I was like hanging on to his coattail, going to the baseball games and everything. And he took care of me pretty good.
Did you sign up because he was already in, or did you wait to get drafted yourself?
I got drafted. I was 18 in July of 43, and I was in the Army November of 43, so 3 months after my birthday. Went to Camp Roberts, got trained there and everything. Finished my training, we got a 30-day leave, R&R at home, and then we reported to Fort back east, and we got it re-outfitted and everything else. All the group that I trained with at Camp Roberts, we all reported there, got outfitted and everything, and we were there about 2 weeks. And they started calling, fall out in the parade grounds, and they started calling names to get on board trucks. Everybody got on the trucks except me. I was the only one left in the parade grounds, trying to find out where I was supposed to go. And I told the sergeant, "What am I going to do?" He said, "Well, I can't find your name on the list. I can't find your number on the list." So he checked with another officer and up the line, and They finally found my records at the Field Artillery headquarters. So I had to wait. Everybody that shipped out that day went to England. And I had to wait for 3 weeks for another batch of people to come in. We assembled to go out, and we got shipped to Italy, which was a 23-day trip over to the Atlantic. Newport News, Virginia to Naples, Italy. It was 23 days in that convoy.
And I want to hear about that. And I know you didn't have it easy. Three Purple Hearts certainly illustrate that. But have you thought about what would have been different had you not been left behind there? Had you gone over to England with everybody else?
I met one of my friends afterwards, and his report was most of them were killed, a lot of them were captured, a lot of them were wounded. There were very few that survived because they were in the main invasion.
So the guys you trained with are guys that were hitting the beaches of Normandy on June 6th?
They were in Normandy, and they were in the first wave, the way I understand it.
So that would have been you, and you and I wouldn't be talking right now.
Exactly. Well, there were survivors, but who knows? God only knows what would have happened.
And we're going to get into the close calls that you survived. But that long ride to Italy, 23 days on the ship, what kind of things were going through your mind?
Really, not too much thinking because we're in the ocean. Nothing to do but look at the ocean, play cards, play dice. And your thoughts are, what's going to happen? What's in the future? You can't speculate what you don't know. Reading the books that I did when I was a kid at the libraries gave me some forethought what it was going to be like. And it wasn't exactly like that, but it was still horrifying to think about it.
What was your relationship with your fellow soldiers like? What kind of guys were you serving with?
It was a mixture, but we all unified ourselves because we knew we had to be together. You got my back, I'm going to take care of your back. So you trusted them. Your trust has to be in your friend or your member of your squad.
What was the role that you were assigned to?
I was a private first class, but once we were assigned to the unit, Rome was captured on June 4th, I think it was. Shortly thereafter, I joined the division as a replacement.
This is the 88th Infantry Division.
They were offline at that time. I joined the squad, which was Company E, 349th Infantry Regiment. They assigned me to be a BAR team leader. Myself and two other men carried the ammunition, carried the BAR, which weighed about 19 and a quarter pounds, and protected the flanks or whatever the firepower was needed.
How much responsibility did you feel there? And did you have any idea what to expect when you hit the beach in Naples?
You're amazed at the destruction that we saw when we got there. Naples was still a lot of ships were sunk. Debris all over the place, the buildings are still bombed out and everything. But it hit us, what are we getting into? Going into the replacement depot, you see all the countryside, how destructive the war had been to that part. And then we were going to go into further north too because we were assigned to a replacement depot that was about 20 miles outside of Naples where we stayed for a few days before we got assigned to a company or a division.
Do you remember that first taste of combat, the first time that you had to put that BAR to use, and in doing so became a pretty significant target of the enemy?
Well, yeah. You remember those things because you had to set it up and position it so you could be able to use it to the best advantage with it and give their best protection where it was needed, wherever the firepower was needed. Sometimes on the flank side, sometimes right in the middle of the fighting zone or whatever, because you had to make sure that you get enough firepower against them and still protect your side of the line. You have experiences with it. Get used to how it shoots and everything. You never shoot it automatically, so you have to fire in bursts of three because that way you don't want to waste them. You only got 20 rounds in a magazine, and you don't want to blow it all on one shooting spree.
What did you know or what did you expect from the other side, from the enemies that you were contending with, these German forces?
I knew they were going to be shooting at us just as bad as we were going to be shooting at them. We never walk into a town not expecting some firepower or walk in the countryside not expecting some artillery fire or fire from the fields, the cornfields, the vineyards, or hidden bunkers that are out there. And you're always on edge for that. And you have to be looking at it, that there's somebody's going to be out there trying to take advantage of that.
You mentioned earlier your brother in the Philippines was killed in action in 1944. So were you in Italy while this happened? And
I was in the hospital when I got the telegram from home.
Well, I'll keep it in chronological order then. Tell me about how you ended up in the hospital. This was the first of your three Purple Hearts?
Yeah, I got wounded and they shipped me back to the hospital, pulled some fragment out of my ankle, sent me to a recuperating hospital.
How'd you get hit? Where were you? What happened?
We were fighting out in the open, and I don't know how I got hit because I didn't feel anything. There was excitement of the fighting. I didn't know it was hit until I started feeling my shoe so wet inside. And I looked down and I seen blood coming out of my boot. And I called for a medic. They patched me up, sent me back to the back to the aid station. From there, they sent me to the hospital. But I didn't know I was hit until I felt some pain and felt my shoe all soggy. It had been raining, so I figured it was bad because of the water. But when I checked it out, my socks was all red with blood. And it got me back to the aid station.
Did that get your attention at all? Did that make you feel a little more susceptible or vulnerable?
Definitely, because artillery has no conscience. It can hit way over here. You can be over here and a little further away from where it hits. But a shell breaks up into so many little pieces, big pieces and little pieces, that anyone can hit you. That's what hit me on my ankle, a piece of shrapnel.
So you're in the hospital recuperating, trying to get better so you can go help your buddies some more, and you get word from home that your brother has been killed in this same war.
Yeah, that doctor's notifying me that he had been killed.
That had to be devastating for you. I can't imagine what that felt like.
It was very devastating. Yeah. Well, the staff was real good. You know, they understood. So they kind of left me alone in my sorrow. But they were all understanding, and they took care of me, you know, to my benefit.
And I know you had plenty of motivation already. I mean, you had a clear purpose you were fighting for. The world was at stake here, but I imagine that made it more personal for you. Did that give you more motivation to win this war and also more motivation to make it home to your family?
I'm motivated to be safer, to keep them out of danger as much as possible, but it's impossible to say, well, I'm not going to go out there because I know they're going to be shooting there. You had to do it. You had to continue the war as it was, as a fighting soldier. You had to go out and do it again. There was ups and downs in there.
And I imagine it had to be hard to be so far from home, knowing what your family must be going through back home.
That was very true. But your thoughts are there. And the letter would take, I don't know how many weeks we go home between the connection, you know, the communication. Even with the V-mail, it was a little faster, but it was still took a long time to get back and forth with letters.
So you heal up, and you go back to your outfit, back on the BAR?
Yep, still go back. They saved it for me. Two different people were assigned to me because the other ones had been wounded too earlier, so we separated, and then never came back to the squad. So when I went back, they put me in the same position as the BAR team leader with two new men that I have to, you know, get reacquainted and trained, and to see what kind of action that they would be giving or what kind of backup they could give you. But you have to, you know, depend on your teammates.
And I mentioned that was only the first of three times that you were wounded during the war. What was the second?
Again, shrapnel. We were in a firefight, and the Germans were in front of us, and there was a valley to the back of us, and we were in a hillside looking down in a valley, but the fighting was in a town which was in front of us. We were in the crest of the road, of the hill, and their shell was hitting down there in the valley because our troops were moving up on that side. And I was in a hole upstairs looking toward the town where the enemies were. And my friend, my mates there, jumped out of the hole hollering that he was wounded, jumped out of the hole, and I seen that a hole about the size of a fist out of his cap was gone, you know, from where the shells hit, where a shrapnel hit him. And he got out of the hole, I pulled him back down, hollered at the sergeant. The sergeant said, well, the aid men are busy, so to get him and take him back to the aid station, which is about 150 yards in a farmhouse to the other side.
We're going to stop right there for a moment. It's break time. Mr. Ramirez followed those orders, and that nearly cost him his life. We'll pick up where we left off when we come back. But first, I want to send a big thank you towards Selma and General Manager Rick Hoffman and the fine folks at Swanson Farney Ford and the entire Farney Automotive Group. You may have seen or heard their advertising on this, but for every car that they sell in August, the entire month, they're going to make a donation to Central Valley Honor Flight and help get our World War II veterans to their memorial. You know how passionate I am about that. Their example there at the Farney Automotive Group caught the attention of another business, which has now become our newest sponsor here on Hometown Heroes. Our World War II veterans deserve a chance to see their memorial in Washington, D.C., and you can help send them there simply by renting a car. Between now and the end of October, visit any Enterprise Rent-A-Car location from Bakersfield in the south to Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Madera, Merced, all the way north to Sacramento. Tell them you heard this ad on Hometown Heroes, and Enterprise will donate 10% of your rental to Central Valley Honor Flight. Restrictions may apply. I'm sure you're familiar with Enterprise, but do you know why the largest car rental company in the U.S. is called Enterprise? The company's founder, Jack Taylor, was a decorated F-6F Hellcat pilot in World War II, flying off the deck of the Big E, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Maybe I should get him on the show sometime and he can tell us how he earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. In the meantime, choose Enterprise for your next rental. Tell him you heard this advertisement on Hometown Heroes, and you'll be helping to send our World War II veterans on one more tour with honor.